powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Joining us right now to talk about this Mariners team heading into spring training, Gary Hill of Mariners Radio Network on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Gary, how's it going?
It's going well. Bump, Stacy, Curtis, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me again.
We are happy to have you here. We were just talking about the hot stove and everything that we learned. Bump was telling us about skeletal movement, some analytical stuff about this team. What was your takeaway from that conversation? Let's start inside baseball before we kind of move ahead to spring training here.
I really enjoyed that conversation. Dave Cameron is super smart, and I always learn something every time I talk to him. My biggest takeaway, though, is he will be doing some play-by-play in spring training. He grew up a Dave Niehaus fan, so he's going to get a couple of play-by-play batters this spring. I think that's the most important takeaway. But it's so interesting to me when I talk to Dave Cameron and Jesse Smith and Joel Fuhrman and all the other people in the Mariners analytics groups, and just about what they're working on and what is next. It is so competitive between every Major League Baseball team as they all try and find the next advantage, what's next. And I think Bump hit on what kind of the next is right now and what everyone's looking for is how the body moves. And it's interesting to hear, like, we know Teoscar Hernandez, we know he hits the ball hard. We can see it. And that's why he's so good, because he hits the ball hard. And the question is, well, why does he hit the ball so hard, and how does he hit the ball so hard? And that's where the movement comes in. And in terms of pitching, like trying to keep pitchers healthy, and how do you throw 99 miles per hour, that sort of thing. So that's kind of the next step. And I recommend, and I know Shannon has a story up on the conversation with Dave Cameron, but for people who haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, because it's really interesting to hear Dave talk about what they're working on.
Yeah, Gary, it was fascinating listening to just the approach that that big league teams are taking now. And then one of the questions I had after listening to it, and he kind of addressed it as well, is just what's the relationship between the guys gathering all this data and then the guys like Scott Servais who have to go out there and implement it? Because Servais is an old school type of guy. All this data wasn't around when he was playing. Is there any pushback there, or do you feel like the Mariners have found a way to work together and incorporate all this stuff?
No, and I think that's what makes the Mariners unique and what is working so well for the Mariners right now. And it's something that I talk about all the time, because you can have the best analysts in the world, but if that information is not being relayed to the players and you can see the results on the field, it does no good. And what the Mariners have done really well is the synergy between the front office and the analysts relaying the information to the coaching staff, and the coaching staff with working with the players to make it happen. I just talked to Paul Sewald about this a couple of weeks ago too, and because his career completely turned around here in Seattle, and he talked about that and specifically cited Joel Fuhrman, who's a pitching guru in the front office for the Mariners, and the things he is doing differently now as opposed to when he was with the Mets. And he's been one of the best relievers in baseball the last 2 years. And that is the biggest key. It's the synergy between the three to make it happen. And you mentioned Scott Servais too. And I think that is what has changed the most from being a manager now, even 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago being a manager. It's so much different than just one person making every decision. It is really a huge group of people that are making decisions, and that's what you want. You want a lot of smart people with input on decisions. And just a small example of that, there's a group of a dozen people that meet every single day to talk about the bullpen that day. And it's people from health, how guys are feeling, matchups, that sort of thing. They talk it all through before every single game. And to me, it's not happenstance that we see the Mariners bullpen being such a strength the last couple of years and being so good, is because they tend to put the pitchers in the best matchups possible, success for them and success for the team. It all works together. It's really fun to talk about because it's the kind of stuff that you don't see play out on the field. It's all behind the scenes stuff, but it makes a huge difference for teams.
No, you're right. It's been a phenomenal group to watch. Two names I kind of have my eye on, though, as we're heading into spring training. Paul Sewald, Corey Brock of The Athletic, had a report that he and Andres Munoz could be potentially limited heading into camp. What's the health status and outlook in general of the bullpen?
So I guess I'm this is a long spring too. So even if, especially bullpen guys, even if they're not throwing right away, I'm not concerned at all about that, especially with bullpen guys, because it just takes very little for them to get ready for the season. Think about last spring. It was a very short spring. Most of the guys that started in the bullpen didn't have an issue starting. So I'm not concerned about Sewald and Munoz, and I'm really excited about the bullpen. It's been a strength for them the last couple of years. And I know, you know, it was interesting. It was kind of a rocky start to last season before they figured it out, but I'm really excited too about a full season for Matt Brash. And I know he's going to be stretched out to start, but the idea of a full season of Brash and the Munoz we saw starting in June, I think is pretty ridiculous. I mean, that 1-2 punch is, you think about just the pure stuff. It's ridiculous. It's amazing. So, you couple that with Sewald and everyone else, and I'm pretty excited to see where this goes. I'm also excited to see who's the next guy. And this time of year, we're not talking about Penn Murphy for sure. We weren't talking about Penn Murphy in spring training, and he was a hugely important part of the bullpen last season. And we have seen consistently the last couple of years guys out of nowhere, guys we're not talking about, being huge parts of the Mariners bullpen. When you look at each guy in the bullpen right now, the only Diego Castillo is really the only one that was a guy before he got here. He was a closer with the Rays and pitched in the World Series. Everyone else, whether young guy or veteran, has really made a name here in Seattle. So I'm excited to see kind of who is next on that list. Who we're not talking about now that's going to be a factor this season, because there will be somebody or a couple of guys.
Well, last year we were definitely talking about Julio to see if he was going to make the opening day roster. And I think about him and I go, how is this spring training going to be different from him? He is established now. He's an all-star. He's the face of this organization. Does that change anything for him when it comes to spring training, or does he just go through the same process he did last year?
It's a good question, because when you do become a vet in spring, it is different in that you're not trying to make the team, right? I mean, last year there was that question whether he'd start. It's really weird to think about. Was Julio going to start the year on the roster? And here we are a year later. Like, he's on the team, so that pressure's off. Like, it doesn't matter his spring. If he goes 0-50, whatever. He's going to be the opening day center fielder and start the season. He could go, you know, 40-70. It doesn't matter what he does in spring training. So it's not really the results. It's just getting ready for the season. So from that aspect, he's on the team, the pressure's off, and he can just do what he needs to do to get ready for the season. He will be like every other veteran in spring training in that regard.
Hey, Gary, I am among the people that would have loved to see like more of a splash move in free agency, just because it's not my money and it's easy. It's easy to say, like, I'll be completely honest. That is what it is. But I do also think that they've taken a step forward with the pieces they have added. So I'm kind of two minds. Would I have loved to see more? Yes. Am I still excited to see this team? Yes. Where do you specifically see improvements, and where are you specifically expecting improvements for the Mariners?
That seems like a very level-headed approach, I think.
Thank you.
On your part. I mean, yes, like who wouldn't want Trey Turner, right? I mean, he's great, but, you know, it kind of is what it is. I think their improvements have been very targeted. Like, I love Teoscar Hernandez. I think that is a huge bat in the lineup, and I just salivate over his exit velocities, and I just can't wait to see him in the lineup with Julio and everyone else. I think that is huge. I think Colton Wong is a really big, I think people generally might be underselling how big of a move that is. Like, he's a top 10 second baseman in the majors, and you look at the production they got at second base last year, and it wasn't great. So I think that is a huge step forward. I love a full season of Cal Raleigh at that position, because I think he is, man, you start to compare him to other catchers in the big leagues, and he is like, sniffing at the top five. You know, if he had the kind of year again that he had last year, which is pretty amazing to think about. So there's also the internal improvement. You know, is Julio going to be better than we saw last year? Is JP going to be better offensively than we saw last year? And that's also what you're hoping for. And honestly, like this pitching staff, a full season of Luis Castillo, I think is super exciting because I think he's one of the best pitchers in the game. And Mariner fans saw that. But a full season of him is going to make a huge difference. I think a full season of George Kirby, a full season of Logan Gilbert, a step better. I think the rotation potentially can be even better than last year. And it was really good last year. But the stuff they have, it's really dynamic. And a full season of it is really exciting. So I think they've improved in a lot of different areas. And I don't necessarily think they're done, so we'll see what happens. I mean, it's Jerry after all, right? Jerry and Justin. So we could see another addition before the start of spring training. I wouldn't put it past him.
It's going to be some rule changes this year, right? Can no longer shift. You got the pitch clock. How do you think those rules are going to affect the game? And for you covering the game for so long, do you like the changes? Do you disagree with them? What are your thoughts there?
I like them. In fact, I don't think I've talked to anyone that doesn't like the pitch clock. I think that's good. And it's not a total game time that I have issue with. It's just the pace of action. I think that's what we're looking for. We're looking for a better pace of action. So I think the pitch clock is really going to help with that. And I think that's a great move. I am very interested to see how the restriction on shifts actually ends up impacting, because I've had a lot of conversations about this and everyone's kind of speculating, and some people think it's going to have a massive impact and some won't think it will have very much of an impact. I lean towards it won't have a huge of an impact as we think, just because I almost hesitate saying that the shift is banned, because I think it's more of a shift restriction, because you're still going to see like JP Crawford playing behind second base. So if there's a laser up the middle, I mean, the shortstop could still be there. So at times it won't feel like really a shift ban. I do think when it comes to lefty pull hitters, that's where it's going to make a difference, because you won't have, theoretically, the person in short right field to pick up that, you know, 10 hopper that gets there and throw them out, or that laser that would be a base hit like in every year in baseball history except for the last five. Mm-hmm. Like, that's going to help pull hitters, unless you see like Tampa Bay starting moving their left fielder over to that position and play without a left fielder or do something wild like that. But that's where I think we'll see the biggest impact. It was interesting. We talked to Scott Service on the recent Hot Stove show you just mentioned too, and he thinks that the running game is going to be really increased because there's a limit on how many times a pitcher can throw to first. The bases are a little bigger. So he's expecting that to increase as well, which I think would be a good thing for the game, because everyone likes the running game. Like, who doesn't like stolen bases? It's right. Great. So I'm all in. I like him.
I'd love to meet the person that's just like, I don't like too much chaos, okay, between batters. Enough with this running.
People running all over the place, chaos. I
mean, they just want home runs all the time. They're like, just get it over with. I don't want anyone on the bases. Hey, so we had a move, not for the Mariners, but Jeff Passan reporting that the Orioles have acquired left-hander Cole Irvin in a trade with the A's. So still some moves being done around the league. Not huge things, but notable, right? A name that we know here in Seattle, Cole Irvin. You mentioned it a little earlier, so I wanted to get back to it. Do you think there's still a possibility that the Mariners continue to make a move or two? And I'm kind of tying on to that, not to hit you with a double barrel, but where would you love to see them at?
First of all, I'm sad that Cole Irvin's out of the division. I really enjoyed his matchups with the Mariners.
I know. That's,
and now Baltimore, now there's only, at best, the Mariners will see him twice. So that's
tragic.
That's bad news. I don't know if I can continue with this conversation.
Need to take some time, I completely understand.
here's what I think how the Mariners sit right now is I think they could use another bat. And the beauty of where they're at is, like, that can be anything, really, because the way I look at it, they really don't have a DH. And I know DH is a position that they want to fly people through. And
yeah.
And people off their feet, you know, from time to time, which is a great philosophy. Yet I think they have some flexibility to add a bat there if they wanted to. or an outfielder if they wanted to. I mean, that's what the beauty of this, I think. They're not really stuck trying to add a position, right? So I think they have some flexibility to make a move, make a trade with somebody, and really pick up almost anything, whether an outfielder, whether just a hitter, or really a corner guy that you can move people around. That's the beauty of it. So I think they have some flexibility there to add just about anything.
All right. He is Gary Hill of Mariners Radio Network, kind enough to join us to help us preview spring training here and talk about some potential, maybe, fingers crossed, moves for the Mariners. Either way, very exciting team. Gary, loved you telling us the ways that they've managed to take a step forward, some names to keep an eye on in spring training, all good stuff. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, anytime. This was super fun, as always.
See you, Gary. All right, that was, again, Gary Hill of Mariners Radio Network, kind enough to join us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Blowout City last night at Climate Pledge, cracking, destroying the Canucks 6-1, their first ever win over Vancouver in 7 tries. What's the real headline?
It's that classic saying, if at first you don't succeed, try 6 more times. It works. I think it works. You know what I mean?
It works.
Fool me once.
Shame on you. Fool me twice. You can't get fooled again.
Can't get fooled again.
I've frequently said that the 7th time's the charm. That's what I think about games against the Canucks and marriages. And so that is that on that.
That's what it is. You know what it is, Stace? Canucks got too many benders out there. You know, I need more wagons.
Oh, God.
Need more wagons.
I so regret. You know? John Buchagross joined the show earlier to tell Bump more hockey phrases that he can start saying. You've started saying slick mittens, dusters.
No, I didn't say that yet. You gotta let me get to it. You know that Maddie Beniers? Slick mittens, bro.
There we go.
Slick
okay,
mittens. Yeah. Saucy Brad. Passes out there.
Did you just pick up a Canadian accent with
I
that?
I did.
All of a sudden, it's like, who is this?
Oh, no, I love the beatdown, you know?
It's great.
Cracking full of wagons. Let's go.
Oh, my God.
Headline Rewrites.
Wagons.
Hockey Bump is one of my favorite.
I love Hockey Bump.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Bump, you need to be live tweeting the next game, which is, what, tomorrow, Friday? Just, man, what a wagon Beniers is. Can't believe it. That was clicking was me typing on my keyboard.
Headline number 2, Patrick Mahomes says he is ready to go for the AFC Championship game. What's the real headline?
If nothing else, just to get him out of the house and away from his family. I know that that's a mean, like, low-hanging fruit kind of dig, but it's right there. How was I not expected to take it? I say that, though, Bump. I don't know how many people thought Patrick Mahomes would not be playing in this one.
Yeah, he's playing. And I low-key feel him, man. I love my family, but I've been cooped up in this house for, like, 10 days.
What? Jen brings you fruit and sandwiches.
No, it's not her. It's the kids.
Oh, okay.
It's the kids. I'm just like, there's questions every 5 seconds. There's noise all the time. So I'm with Pat Mahomes, man. You got to get up out the house and get ready. But who thought he wasn't going to play in this game?
No one.
Come on now. It's the AFC Championship game. This guy is, what, like 12-1 or something like that in the postseason. Like, it's crazy at home, at least. It's crazy what he's done in the postseason.
Yeah.
And 75 to 80% Pat Mahomes is better than most guys out there on any day. So you roll your dice, you see what he does.
50% Pat Mahomes might be better than most guys. I mean, certainly to the Chiefs, a 50% Patrick Mahomes is better than Chad Henne, right? But Mahomes was out there with half of his game taken out, not being able to be too mobile. And they still were like, yeah, sorry, Chad. You gotta go sit back down. We're going to Pat on this one. And it makes sense. It is Patrick Mahomes. I would not be surprised at all to see shifts in favorites back towards the Chiefs in this one. It would be really, really fun to see the Bengals advance. I would love to see them win a Super Bowl. They are an incredibly likable team. Bump, you pointed it out with yesterday's 4-down territory. They are also the team of the remaining 4 with the fewest Pro Bowlers. So managing to still get it done. But I love watching Patrick Mahomes play. And it is hard to say no to more of that. I almost wish that we could have 2 Super Bowls. It's kind of what this weekend's going to be, right? 2 Super Bowls, and then we just get 1.
And you want to see Pat Mahomes go at Joe Burrow. You want to see that. Like, you will pay to watch this go down. 2 of the best in the game.
Yep.
Headline Rewrites.
Headline number three, the Jets have officially hired Nathaniel Hackett to be their next offensive coordinator. What is the real headline?
It's great news for New York because the last time a team hired Hackett to lure Aaron Rodgers away, it worked out well. I'm so sorry. It did not work out at all. It did not work out. That stemming from a report last year that the Denver Broncos originally hired Nathaniel Hackett to try to get Aaron Rodgers as his former OC. It didn't work out. The Jets, though, might stand a better chance because Aaron Rodgers has made it clear on his appearances with Pat McAfee that he could be willing to go to another situation and truly believes he could be league MVP again if he had the right pieces.
Yeah, and there's some pieces over there. You got
Garrett Wilson.
You got Breece Hall if he's healthy.
Yep.
You have a defense that was pretty good. You got a young Sauce Gardner over there. And when Rodgers was with Hackett, three Pro Bowls, two All-Pros, 70% completion rate, 48 touchdowns, back-to-back MVPs. Now, he did have some help. One of the best receivers in the game, Devontae Adams, is over there catching footballs for him. So you have to take that into account. But chemistry is important, especially with an offensive coordinator and a quarterback, especially with Aaron Rodgers, because that chemistry, if he don't like you, he will get rid of you. He'll be on the sidelines blowing things up. Where's his emotions on his sleeve?
Okay, but would you call the Jets a wagon? Because if I'm Aaron Rodgers and I'm 36 years old, I'm trying to go to a team that can be a wagon if I join. Not
Garrett
a team
Wilson's got some slick mittens.
He does have slick mittens.
Let's go.
But I get concerned. I get a little concerned.
You can throw some, you know, but Rodgers, he can throw some saucy passes over there and everything will be fine.
It's true.
Now, listen, I don't know if the kids are saying it anymore. Not my Gen Z kings and queens. If we have Gen Z replaced the T with another phrase, please let me know. But for lack of that phrase, I'm going to tell you guys right now. There is a fascinating report, speaking of Nathaniel Hackett, former Denver Broncos head coach, coming out of Denver. Now, it starts by saying the Panthers were no longer an option for Sean Payton, and there was an issue with Payton's interview with the Broncos. What was the issue? It's interesting. Don't go anywhere. I'll tell you next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Let's head to the NFL for a look around the league. We are going to start in Denver / Carolina. So we know that Sean Payton has been a head coaching candidate or target for a couple different teams. Now you're going to have to give up at least a first rounder to be able to get Sean Payton because the Saints still have his rights because he walked away and wasn't fired. So the Panthers were looking for a new head coach. They went with Frank Reich over Payton, over interim head coach Steve Wilks. The Broncos also, who were reportedly pursuing Payton, are now not. This from Mark Maskey, who works for the Washington Post. He's an NFL reporter. He says, there was an issue with Sean Payton's interview with the Broncos. Payton likes the idea of coaching Russell Wilson and having that defense, but fears a potential power struggle with a member of the ownership group, source says. Who? Who is the member? Tell us. There are six members of the ownership group, and I need to know where this feud comes from. Now, the majority owner, I think he's the majority owner, is Rob Walton, who's the son of the Walmart founder, Sam Walton. He's worth $60 billion. He's like the main guy. And then there's these two other people, his son-in-law, Greg Penner, and then I think his daughter is Carrie Penner. And then Melody Hobson's in there. Condoleezza Rice, Lewis Hamilton, that Lewis Hamilton, Formula One champion. I think that's the entirety of the ownership group. So one of these people Sean Payton reportedly has beef with, I got to know who it is.
You think Payton's more of a Max Verstappen guy on the Formula One circuit?
That's got to be. Can you imagine if it's like Sean Payton wanted to coach the Broncos, but he just hates Lewis Hamilton, so it didn't work out. There's no power struggle with Lewis Hamilton. I'm guessing it is. First of all, do we even think this is real, Bob? Like, do we think that this is something that has been leaked because Sean Payton, for whatever reason? Like, anytime I see something like this, I'm like, where is it coming from? Who does it benefit? Who does this report serve? You know what I mean? Because it's hard to take everything just on its face.
There's always more to it. There's always more to the story, especially when you're dealing with the NFL and coaches and all that stuff. But I feel like there has to be some truth to this. Sean Payton is in a position to where if he does not feel like it is the perfect situation for him, he ain't got to come back. He can sit back and wait another year or two, and teams are still going to want him. He's in the position of power right now. But there has to be some truth to this.
I think so. I mean, I don't want to speculate, but if there is an owner, like maybe a member of the Walton family or whatever, that wants more of a say and more of a hand in teams, we have seen owners, Jerry Jones, that are kind of like do have a lot of oversight with teams. Like here in Seattle, we're used to Paul Allen having been, when he was owner, obviously, very hands off. And that's not the case with every franchise. So I'm wondering if for a head coach who was going into a place where that was going to be the head case or was going to be the case, if you're out. Like the head coaching job for Dallas, very prestigious, also not especially appetizing given how much Jerry Jones is going to be peering over your shoulder. That's one example I wouldn't love.
Yeah.
All right. Heading to New York here, Jordan Rannan, who covers the Giants, says that Brian Daboll, head coach for the Giants, has won the Pro Football Writers of America Coach of the Year Award. This is not the Coach of the Year Award that is from the Associated Press and part of the NFL Honors. It's a separate one. But is it fair to guess that if he won the PFWA Coach of the Year Award, then he may also win Coach of the Year through the Associated Press and the NFL Honors?
It's a possibility. You know what I mean? I think that he's a strong candidate to win it regardless of what happened there, right? I look at him and I look at Doug Peterson and I say those are probably the two guys in the front when it comes to Coach of the Year. Mm-hmm. So it could be some foreshadowing. It could be. But who's on those panels? Who's making those decisions? Where's the correlation there? If there's some correlation, then the chances of it being real, yeah.
Also being named as winners in this award, Eagles executive vice president and general manager Howie Roseman was named executive of the year. D'Amico Ryans, the assistant coach of the year. He's out there with San Francisco. Wonderful job with that team for him. All of those, honestly, like well-deserved. All right, I'm heading back to something that I had in NFL headline rewrites, but we're going to cover as an NFL headline here. We know that the Jets have hired Nathaniel Hackett as their offensive coordinator. When we spoke about it previously in headlines, we kind of joked about the idea of Aaron Rodgers potentially going there. Let's talk about the job in the offense without Rodgers that Nathaniel Hackett is inheriting. How can the Jets be more competitive in a division that now has a really good Miami Dolphins team, obviously a great Bills team, and we'll see what the Pats will be, but you can never completely rule them out because they're the Pats. I mean, suddenly it's kind of a really competitive division.
You know what they need, Stace?
A quarterback.
You need a quarterback to make this thing go. This is an example right here of you have to build a team. Oh, I feel like offensively you have a decent team. Defensively you have a decent team. You've done a good job building there. Now it's time that you go get a veteran quarterback. That's why this Aaron Rodgers deal, they have to go all in with this, man. Because I don't see any other veteran quarterback who's available or who would be interested that could help you get over the hump. Because you're in a tough division. You got to see who. You got to see Tua. You got to see Josh. I mean, Mac Jones is all right, but, you know, you got to see two really good quarterbacks and offenses. Who can take him down? No other than Mr. Big Pharma himself.
Do you think Tua is the answer for Miami? Because he's seen his share of doubt out there.
I think that he is the answer for at least the next couple of years. I would not be surprised if they go out and find a young quarterback late in the draft, bring him in, and just see what happens. Because with Tua, he'll show greatness. Like, he was one of the most accurate passers in the NFL for a very long time. And then the concussion thing happened, and his decision-making just went out the window. And you don't want to waste Tyreek Hill's window. He's got, like, two or three more years of greatness in him before he starts to slow down a little bit. I might be wrong, but you got Waddle, you got Gesicki over there, you got a good run game. It's time to go now when the division is it's not up for the taking, but you can compete with these guys.
All right, some injuries for the San Francisco 49ers ahead of their game against the Eagles this weekend. Running back Christian McCaffrey will not practice today. You also had Elijah Mitchell, who will not practice. Deebo Samuel is limited. Kyle Shanahan said, though, that he said yesterday, because all these players were out or limited yesterday, that all of them are playing. He added about Christian McCaffrey, there is a, quote, 0% chance he doesn't play on Sunday. So what it sounds like to me, Bump, is guys are heading into a must-win game banged up, but it doesn't mean they're not going to play that time of year.
McCaffrey don't need no practice. We talking about practice. practice. This is Christian McCaffrey, one of the most dynamic players in the game. All you got to do is tell him what the play is, what direction to run, and he'll take care of the rest. He's a smart football player. He's shown that he can handle the offense. I could see if this was his first or second week and he's learning terminology. Nah, he's 11, 12 games deep at this point. He's good to go. He don't need no practice.
I saved this one for you because I thought you might like it. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are looking for their new OC after parting ways with Byron Leftwich. They've completed an interview with Vikings wide receivers coach Keenan McCardle for the open offensive coordinator position. Now, we know that there are offensive coordinators who have been wide receivers coaches. I'm going to say Sean McVay maybe was a wide receivers coach.
Tight ends coach.
We know that Shane Waldron was a tight ends coach. So there are lots of guys that have come from quarterback backgrounds, tight end backgrounds. What do you think of guys coming from wide receiver backgrounds as OCs? How does that change and help the way you see an offense?
One, you know I love it. You know I love it.
I knew it. I was serving this story on a platter for you.
Served it up for me. I'm about to spike this thing. Yes, why not go get a wide receiver coach, a guy who understands coverages and can open this game up for you? Here's the thing. People are going to say about wide receivers, oh, they don't know the box. They don't know the box. Man, if you study enough, you're around the game enough, you know the box. Am I going to be able to tell a right guard, look, we got to step here, put your hand right there, and drop? No, but I'm going to tell you where to go. That's your assignment. Get there. Offensive line coach, get them right. But as long as you know your assignments, you are good to go. I'm happy wide receiver getting some love. His QBs get some love. O-linemen get love, as they should, but don't sleep on us guys outside.
It's also like saying, though, that like a secondary's coach doesn't understand being in the box or doesn't understand the front seven, right? Like, oh, he was a cornerback's coach. What does he know about like defensive line play? And it's like, I mean, he doesn't have to tell the defensive line how to do everything. He's the head coach with a staff of a bajillion people underneath him that are trying to make this thing go.
What do great leaders do in any organization?
Delegate.
Exactly.
Hire the right people.
Exactly. You know the gist of it. All right, this is what you're supposed to do. But when it comes to the fine details of it, hire somebody that you know and trust and let them do their job.
All right, Bump, I'm sorry, but I'm going to steal something from you.
All right.
I am going to steal your fourth down from earlier in the show. And instead, we're going to expand it because I sprung it on you. The question was, which non-quarterback can have the biggest impact on the outcome in each of these two games? And then I only let you answer for two. We're going to now expand it and talk about some of the biggest impact players in these two games this weekend. Quarterbacks are off the table.
Right.
Not Brock Purdy, not Patrick Mahomes, not Jalen Hurts, not Joe Burrow. We are not allowed to even say their names. I mean, we'll probably do it accidentally. But we got to look outside from under center to find the most impactful players for these games. That's coming up next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, Bump, earlier in four down territory, I asked you which non-quarterback will have the biggest impact in each of these games. I figured I would extend it to all four teams. So I just said, like, okay, individual games, you got to pick one guy. You've had a little more time, about an hour now, to think of an answer. And we're also going to about an hour.
Look, you had an hour, son. You better come with
it. You had an hour, so you better have a for sure answer here. But I also wanted to be able to extend it to potentially one guy from each team. Basically, like, it's not even the biggest wild cards. It's just there's such a concentration of talent with these four teams. Like it really is like we're getting two Super Bowls. Like these are, I know that the Bengals are a third overall seed and the 49ers are a second seed. It doesn't matter. Like both had really long win streaks heading into the playoffs in the first place. We already knew that the Chiefs and Eagles were the number one seeds because they were fantastic all year long. It's not just the quarterbacks that are going to impact this, and I love how much talent we're going to be able to see. So I wanted to take the quarterbacks out of the picture and talk instead about some of the guys that can have the biggest hand and whether their team advances to try to win it all in the Super Bowl. So let's start over in the NFC and take a look at the 49ers, where you have a lot of choices.
I do have a lot of choices. I got two guys. For each team, I got two guys.
Okay.
For the 49ers, I'm going with Kyle Juszczyk. He is going to play a big role in this. You know how he's going to play a big role in this?
Covering up illegal downfield plays for George Kittle.
Exactly, right? Let's do that again. But he's integral in this run game. I mean, you focus on Christian McCaffrey and what he brings to the table, but not too many teams play with a legit fullback, and the 49ers are one of those teams, and he's responsible for getting a hat on that second level when you look at his linebackers. A defense that against the Philadelphia Eagles that produced 70 sacks, so they will get downhill. They have a bunch of tackle for losses. I look at Juszczyk as one of the guys who are unsung every single game. He plays an unglorified position. He's not going to get the love that he deserves. I think Juszczyk has to have a good game. Defensively, I'm looking at Hufanga. Hufanga's a Pro Bowler, the guy out of USC. When I first saw him on film, I saw play recognition and decisiveness. When he makes a decision to get downhill to attack a football, that's exactly what he does. I told you yesterday that Jalen Hurts has to have a clean game. He cannot turn that football over. That's going to keep this defense in it. Now, the guys in the box are going to have a huge role in that, but I look at Hufanga in the back end, and I go, if he can get his hands on a couple footballs, then rather be a major tip, because you know they're going to throw the football down the field to AJ. You know they're going to take the shot. And Hufanga plays in the box at times as well, but he's on that back end. I like that those two.
He's been great all year. Heading into the game against the Seattle Seahawks in their final meeting on December, I want to say 15th, that Thursday night football game, he was the leader in interceptions. I'm not entirely sure where he ended up. Let's see. He was second on the team in interceptions with 4, Gibson first with 5th. Still, you have 9, 10, 11, 12 between their top 3 defensive backs. So no small challenge there for Jalen Hurts in the Philadelphia Eagles. Speaking of the Eagles, let's head over to Philadelphia's side for 2 players from the Eagles, non-quarterbacks, that are going to have the biggest impact in whether their team advances to a Super Bowl.
My unsung hero. I think that's the theme of this. Like, guys who
unsung heroes
who aren't really big names, but if they have a big game, they could help.
Okay.
I'm looking at Kenneth Gainwell again, 112 yards against the Jets. He needs to help Miles Sanders out. If they can get 2 guys running the football, that means they got 3 guys running the football, because Jalen Hurts himself is a runner. You get 3 guys in that backfield who can run. Now the RPOs are opened up. Now the commitment to the run is there. Guys are biting up. And now you can take those shots against Hufanga in the game that I'm talking about, against Hufanga, against Ward, and put some pressure on him. The other guy is C.J. Gardner-Johnson. That's just as many interceptions as our guy Tariq Woolen. He's going to have to put clamps. He's going to have to be the guy to catch the deep ball when Purdy wants to take a shot, when the ball is tipped up in the air. He's been the guy to roam across the field and make these plays. Those 2 guys need to step up.
All right, heading over to the AFC, where we got the Bengals and Chiefs. You want to start with Cincinnati?
Let's go Cincy.
Okay.
Defensive line, Hendrickson. Hendrickson, last year he was a Pro Bowler, not a Pro Bowler this year, but he has 8 sacks. You got a hobbled Pat Mahomes. What does that mean? You have to get that guy stepping up in the pocket, trying to move outside the pocket. He needs to feel the pressure, and it starts with this man right here. You got to test out that ankle. You got to dive at him. You're like, what's up, man? How mobile are you? You need to be gathering information that the whole first quarter upstairs are going to be looking at it. The D-line's going to be talking. Hey, he's not moving. We can get after him. Pat Mahomes has to prove that he's able to get outside the pocket or just stand in there and push the ball down the field efficiently.
All right, and the second player, impactful / unsung hero.
Jesse Bates. Jesse Bates leads his team with 4 interceptions on that back end. And again, these guys are related. Henderson needs to put that pressure, Jesse Bates, to take advantage of those errant throws. Mm-hmm. When you cannot push off your back foot, you can't drive the football the way you want to, those are the ones that get away from you. Those are the ones that sail up a little bit. Or you miss inside when you're trying to go outside. You miss outside when you're trying to go inside. You miss high when you're trying to go low. It messes with your accuracy. Now, Pat Mahomes is the guy who can make it all happen on a broken foot.
Yeah.
But if you want to win this game, these 2 guys got to have big ones on defense.
Okay, we got 2, 4, 6 players about to make it 8, because the Chiefs have their own weapons. It's not just going to come down to Patrick Mahomes. It's not just going to come down to Travis Kelce. They've got other guys here. Let's hear your 2 for the Chiefs.
This rookie is impressive. Isaiah Pacheco, 830 yards, 5 touchdowns. He finishes runs. He's dynamic. You know what he did too? He said, Tyreek Hill is gone. Don't trip. I'll wear the number 10. No pressure. You know, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I'll put that on.
You know, I could wear that. I can get down with that. And he's done a great job of that. He's versatile off the backfield. He can receive the ball as well. But then on the other side, the big boy, 17 TFLs, 15 and a half sacks. Chris Jones needs to get after that quarterback. Joe Burrow has done a great job of being composed in the pocket and diagnosing defenses. You know what messes up timing? When you got to move inside the pocket. So the same thing that I'm asking Cincinnati to do to the Chiefs need to do with Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Get Joe Burrow to move and have to diagnose and get on the run. Because once he gets outside that pocket, he can run. He can run. But backyard football gets you in trouble at some times. Chris Jones up for Defensive Player of the Year out of him and Nick Bosa. This guy's had a great season as an interior lineman. I got to see him go to work.
I was going to say, two of the three nominees for Defensive Player of the Year are in this weekend's games. Micah Parsons was the third. Cowboys out of this one. But Chris Jones and Nick Bosa were the two other nominees. In fact, Offensive Player of the Year nominees have representatives in these games. MVP has representatives in these games with Hurts. Jefferson's not in here. Obviously, Allen's not in here. But you've also got Burrow and Mahomes. Like, it's just, it's an embarrassment of riches this weekend. I cannot wait to watch these games.
That shows you how important personnel is.
Tell you Seattle. What.
Go get a baller on defense with that number five pick, please.
Well, I'm so glad you said that, Bump. You have naturally helped me transition to our next conversation here. Where do they start? Where did the Seahawks start? Do you need to get quarterback first, or is quarterback the last piece of your rebuild? That's next.